I remember as a child when the Hindenburg used to fly over New York City, it used to fly pretty low. It was probably like 1,000 feet. I always wanted to see it land at Lakehurst. I did have the opportunity to go there when the disaster happened. I have no idea whether it was spring, fall, or summer. And my mother died in 1937. To be honest, I don't really know whether Mrs. Billington took me or my mother. And Lakehurst is quite a ways from New York City, really. It was quite a long time, a ride on the bus when the disaster happened. Visitors stayed away from the landing mat quite a distance. Oh my goodness, it had to be thousands of feet. So I, you know, when I seen the disaster, it was hard to see people jumping out of the gondola and so forth. But the funny part about it is when I first got into the Navy, that's where I got assigned to.
Well, good day, everybody. I'm Matt Hammett, and welcome back to the Lead Me Lifecast. This is part two of a series of special episodes featuring my grandfather, Edmund Hammett. And this week's episode is simply called Jump. These interviews with my grandfather are the first episodes I ever produced in hopes of having my own show. So they sound a little different from what you're used to on the Lifecast, but I hope you have as much fun listening as I had making them. Here's part two.
He said, Edmund, we're going to put you in a place where you won't be able to run away. And it was supposed to be a reformatory for bad boys. It was, I remember it was in a Dobbs Ferry area along the Hudson River. And when I got there, I asked, I don't know if we called him the warden, but anyway, he was the head poncho, the man in charge. There was a brick wall, one area that was supposed to be a recreation area. And I asked him if I could sit there because I like trains. The New York Central Railroad used to run right across on the Hudson River. He said, yeah, you can go out there and sit on the wall. I don't know. If I recall, this wall wasn't too high. It was about 8 feet or 12 foot maximum. And this side rail that was right next to this brick wall was going by real slow. It had these gondola cars, like a coal car, except it's half as high in sight. Anyway, these gondola cars were empty, and it was going along real slow on the side rail. I remember the clicking of the wheels on the gaps in the track. They were going clunk, 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 clunk. My little brain says, jump, jump, every time I heard the clunk, clunk. So anyway, I got brave enough, and I left the wall, and I jumped into one of these gondola cars. I was all beat up, and my arms were all scraped, and these cars were pretty dirty. They had all this coal dust on them. So anyway, the train got all the way up to New Hampshire before it stopped. And because finally, one of the railroad police caught me coming, trying to climb out of the car. They brought me into the main station, and they tried to bribe me with ice cream and candy to make me talk so they could figure out where I came from. And I knew all I had to do was open my mouth. I had that Brooklyn accent. They would know right away where I came from. So anyway, finally, one of them got me to talk, and he says, yep, he's from Brooklyn. Mrs. Ratner couldn't believe it, because when I got back to the Children's Aid Society, she says, my goodness, we put you in Dobbs Ferry thinking there's no way you could run away, which there wasn't, because they would lock all of the individuals up at night. So finally, Mrs. Ratner says, well, we can't keep you in the orphanages. We can't keep you in the farm schools. And she said, we can't keep you in Dobbs Ferry. Mrs. Ratner said, we're going to try putting you in a foster home.
So another new chapter begins for my grandfather. Out of the orphanage and into a reformatory for very bad boys. And soon he would enter his very first foster home with a very bad grandpa. And you're going to hear all about it in just a minute. First, let me remind you, subscribe to my newsletter at matthammettmusic.com. Also, go to my Facebook page, give me the big thumbs up, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Matt Hammett. And if you haven't subscribed to the Lead Me Lifecast on iTunes or SoundCloud yet? What are you waiting for? And tell all your friends. Here's more with my grandfather, Edmund Hammett.
They did put me in one foster home. I wasn't there very long. This gets to be a cycle going back and forth to the Children's Aid Society. So Mrs. Ratner says, well, we got a party that I'm willing to adopt a son. And so we'll put you with them. And their name was Benjamin Moore. Now, whether they were involved or they were the same people that were in the paint business, Benjamin Moore, because they had nothing to do with paint. They were manufacturing these big belts for machinery. The place where they had me in was Great Neck, Long Island. It's where the estate was. And these were very wealthy people. They had a big estate. And I understand they had one in Little Neck and one in Great Neck, and they had one in Connecticut someplace along the Long Island Sound. And they had a yacht, so it's probably the reason why they had these estates along the Long Island Sound. Anyway, they kept me in my own room in the estate. I wasn't allowed to wander around. When they fed me, I was in this big dining room that had about, my goodness, like 20 chairs and big long table. And I'd eat it all by myself. I never ate with the family. And then, of course, they'd have me back in my room again. They gave me all kinds of toys and all kinds of goodies I wanted. I know the mister wasn't home very much. He was always on some African safari or some business trip out of town, so I very, very seldom seen him. The grandfather was the only one that took time to recognize me. They had a lot of limousines. They had 8 or 10-car garage. They had all these big limousines, and the grandfather would get one of the chauffeurs to take us into New York City, and Grandpa would either take me to a movie, and he'd buy me a bag of popcorn, and of course he'd get me back into the estate before Mr. or Mrs. missed us. Grandpa took me down to the lodge where the senior housed all these trophies that he would bring back from Africa and so forth. They were all kinds of animals and stuffed animals. Grandpa would go down with a shotgun and he'd shoot the antlers off the moose's head. So he just thought that was a big joke, so, because he thought that was a big thrill for me. Yeah. I didn't stay around there long enough for the seniors to ever go down to this cabin, which was away from the estate. They had a wrought iron fence around the whole property. You had to come in through a gate. One of the kids next door had a hacksaw, and I asked him if I could borrow it so I could cut a hole in the fence. So I managed to cut a section of the wrought iron fence out that enough that I'd get my body through it. I hitchhiked back in to New York and finally got on the subways again. And then Mrs. Ratner says, I just can't believe it. We can't even keep you in a foster home. Of course, that really wasn't a foster home. They were looking for adoption, to my knowledge. I could be wrong. The last foster home I was in was called, they were Mrs. Kraft. They were in Elmhurst, Long Island, and which really was close to Flushing Meadows. As a matter of fact, Flushing Meadows now is where LaGuardia Airport is. The sad part about the Kraft family is that when they left the house, they locked the house, and I wasn't allowed in the house, regardless whether it was raining, snowing, or wind blowing, or what the weather was. So I had a couple of buddies in the neighborhood that took me in while the Kraft family had their house locked, which really wasn't too often. Anyway, finally, I was in high school, and I remember the teacher telling me, she says, Eddie, you're going to have to report to the Children's Aid Society. She says, you can't come to school anymore. And I said, well, I don't understand. She said, well, when you find out and you talk to your counselor, she'll tell you all about it. So anyway, I ended up down the Children's Aid Society again, and I sat in this little cube with Mrs. Ratner. And Mrs. Ratner told me, she said, we can't take care of you anymore. She said, you're too old, so you're going to have to go on your own. I said, how am I supposed to go on my own? She says, well, when you go back to Mrs. Kraft, you find out whether you could pay him so much a week for room and board. So that's what I did. I asked Mrs. Kraft, I says, can I stay here and pay you for room and board? And she says, yeah, we want $15 a week. Anyway, I asked, Mrs. Ratner got me a job at the G. Sherman Music Corporation. Now, whether that's still existing, I don't know. That was on 43rd Street, right near the New York Central Railroad Station. My wages at the G. Sherman Music Corporation was only $16 a week, and I had to pay room and board $15 a week. So it left me a dollar in my pocket. And of course, in those days, the subway was only a nickel, so I had quite a few nickels to go back and forth. I looked for a job at a sheet metal company in Long Island. That was Long Island City, I remember that. Then there was a flour mixing plant. So I went over there for a job. The salary was halfway decent for that day. You had to make flour for rye bread, flour for wheat bread, and flour for white bread. And you had to run up and down all day, feeding the hopper, and then running down and bagging all this flour. Anyway, by the end of the day, I was so exhausted, I just couldn't even hardly stand on my feet. And I got my coat, and I was ready to go. I started to go home, and the owner says, you can't go home yet. She says, there's a truck coming in here, and you're going to have to load the truck with the flour, then you can go home. So I told her to go stick it. Anyway, I don't know what the details are. I can't remember. My brother got a hold of me. He said, well, why don't you come up to Detroit? At least you can make some decent money up there in one of the defense plants. He sent me the money for the train fare up to Detroit. I took the Central Railroad all the way up to Detroit. And when I got up there, my brother's wife says, well, don't you have a coat? And I says, no. She says, my God, the poor kid froze to death because I wasn't used to Detroit's temperature compared to New York City. Anyway, she gave me her coat, her plate. They lived in Highland Park, Michigan, which is now a colored neighborhood, but it was a very exclusive area in its day. So my brother actually was living with her folks and then taking me, and that didn't go over so big. So I think I was only there about 4 or 5 days. And my brother got me aside and says, you know, you're going to have to leave because Gene's parents are just unhappy about you being here. Anyway, I finally got a letter from the U.S. to tell me that I had to report to a recruiting station. So, which I did. I reported to the recruiting station, and they told me that you can't join the service here. You're going to have to go back to New York because you're not a resident of Michigan. And I said, oh, my goodness. So, anyhow, I took the train back to New York, and when I got off the train station, I went directly to the recruiting station. I had no place to go, no place to live. So I went to the Army recruiting, and he says, we're not taking people in the Army today. He says, you're going to have to go across the street and join the Navy. I says, I don't want to join the Navy. I want to join the Army. Recruiter says, well, why don't you want to join the Navy? I says, I don't like the ocean. And the recruiter says, you ever been on the ocean? I says, no. He says, get your rear end over there. Across the street and join the Navy. So that's what I did. So anyway, the recruiter says, well, you can go home for a week and report back here in a week. And I says, I got no place to go. He says, you don't want 7 days off? I says, no. I says, assign me to a troop train. So that's what they did. So I got on a troop train, went up to Sampson, New York. The war was taking place. They had to ship people out in a hurry, so I was only in Sampson for 2 weeks. They assigned me to Lakehurst, which I thought was very strange because of the Lakehurst experience I had with the Hindenburg. So when I got to Lakehurst, our job was to land blimps. And that was a pretty dangerous job. Three and four people on the landing field grabbing these lines and trying to slow the blimp down. We'd either get injured or get killed. I guess they kept it pretty silent as far as the news is concerned. They had an airfield right by the blimp mat. Finally, I got approved, and they sent me down to HTA. That I really enjoyed, and I was striking for aviation mechanic. Then finally on the bulletin board, I seen I got assigned for sea duty.
Next week on the Lead Me Lifecast.
Japanese suicide bombers are coming at you. You could see them in the canopy. You could see their scarf and even their teeth in their mouth. When they were that close to you, you ought to hear all these guys and this whole convoy. You know, oh my goodness. I still get tears in my eyes over it. It was hard to accept.
Well, thanks for joining me for part two of three special episodes with my grandfather, Edmund Hammett. If you want to hear more from the Lead Me Lifecast, don't forget you can go to matthammettmusic.com, listen to old episodes on my blog page. Also, you can subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud and go back and listen to every episode you've missed. Join me next week for one more episode with my grandfather, Edmund Hammett, on the Lead Me Lifecast.